Hey, it's John Lee Dumas of EO Fire, and it's The Entrepreneurial You, the show for dedicated and passionate Caribbean entrepreneurs seeking daily inspiration, brought to you by author, speaker, and award-winning entrepreneur, Henneka Watkus Porter. You must be prepared to ignite.
Coming up on this episode of The Entrepreneurial You.
We have to look internally at ourselves and say, yes, we are enough, right? And we can buy from each other and sell products to each other and understand that by doing that, we are creating value within our own communities.
If you are not willing to risk the usual, you will have to settle for the ordinary, Jim Rohn. Greetings and pleasant day to you, my peak performer. It is episode 224 of the Entrepreneurial You podcast. I'm your host, Henneka Watkus Porter, and I'm really so excited today because I'm going to be touching on a topic that I, for some reason, one reason or another, I kind of never touched before. Maybe I was steering away from the controversy. I don't know what it was, but I've never touched it before. And so here I'm going to be looking at it today as I talk with Eli Smith. Now, Eli founded and he runs successful businesses in construction and real estate development. He's a committed and energetic entrepreneur, following in the footsteps of his parents who were successful business owners for over 40 years. Eli has been recognized by Governor Cuomo for his entrepreneurial spirit and achievement in contracting, and he's passionate about giving back to his community through mentoring students and recognizing and empowering minority and women-owned businesses. I'm really excited to talk with Eli Smith today, and the conversation we're going to be having is being a Black business owner in America. Welcome, Eli.
Thank you so much, Henneka, for having me and be a part of your great show, and I'm looking forward to this incredible conversation I know we're about to have.
Yes, and it's my absolute pleasure as well. So before we dive into that stuff, all that good stuff, where's the one place in Jamaica that you'd like to visit? And I'm assuming here that you perhaps know a little bit about Jamaica. You've heard about Jamaica or even been here before. So enlighten me.
So I have never been to Jamaica. I always wanted to go. I've been to the Bahamas, to St. Thomas, for a cruise a couple of times. I have a couple of friends that are from Kingston that now live in New York, and they always tell me to get down to Jamaica and, you know, and that the beaches there are so beautiful. So I guess I would throw this back in your court. If my first time in Jamaica, where must I go for my very first time on my bucket list?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I don't know where to start. Well, first thing I'll say to you though, Eli, is to avoid the all-inclusive hotels. No, not knocking them or anything because they serve their purpose, but you never ever get to see the true Jamaica. And I'd like you to visit like just rustic Jamaica. So I want you to go to, I'm an outdoorsy person. So the Blue Mountains, right? Just take you through to the Blue Mountains. I know Blue Mountain Bicycle Tours. It's amazing, right? I'd want you to start with something rustic. Then certainly enjoy some food. I'm off meat now. I'm no longer a meat eater, but certainly I'd want you to test the jerk pork, the ackee and the saltfish, and yeah, some you know, red pea soup and all of that. Yeah.
Now, as American Jamaican restaurants, I love oxtail and the Caribbean restaurants here in New York, but is, you know, when I speak to true Jamaicans, they say the food in Jamaica is totally different from how the food is made in the States. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, even it's going to be different. It's going to be different because even with the, you know, we do a lot of organic stuff. And so the seasonings and all of these things will taste different. And so influence the taste of the food. It could come. It's going to come close, but it's not going to be the real thing. Come to Jamaica for the real thing after the pandemic.
I will, definitely.
All right. So, yeah, absolutely. So let's get started on this very, perhaps one might say, controversial topic. And it's one that, you know, a lot of people shy away from for many reasons. But I think what happens, and I could talk about, you know, being a Black business owner in Jamaica, but it wouldn't have had the same impact because we know that being Black in Jamaica and being Black in America are two different things, right? In the Jamaican context, what we have a very classist society, that's number one, and it's also colorism play a huge part. So though we have no rights, I mean, we have some white Jamaicans here because, of course, our motto is out of many, one people. So we have, you know, we're influenced by Europeans, Africans, Americans, etc., etc. So we do have, like I said, a very small base of white Jamaicans, as it were, but predominantly we are of African descent. Yeah. And we do face some classism and colorism, as it were. So it depends on where you come from in this beautiful island. Then, you know, you're not given the same notoriety as some persons. And your surname has a lot to do with it as well. Influence how much impact you have. And also, if you're a lighter shade, then you get acceptance more readily. People tell you that that's not true. But deep in the psyche of our people, deep in the trenches, it is the reality, right? So I see the news. I see what happens in the United States. Truth is, sometimes I don't think I pay as much attention as I should, because you kind of just live in a bubble sometimes and you think, okay, that's them. But I know deep inside it affects all of us, because when the US sneezes, Jamaica catches a cold, right? It's like that. So I did a long preamble to get to the point. But here is what I want to ask you. What's it like? And I'm going to get straight to the point for you to tell me, what's it like being black in America? Take away the business side of it. Just being black in America, what does that mean?
It is of course, this is my everyday life, so I never lived anywhere else, right? So, you know, I was having a conversation with a group of business leaders, black business leaders, about this last week, where we have a black chamber of commerce here. And all of us agreed to this one point. It's a struggle every day being black in America, right? We get so many no's. We constantly feel like, and I know you know about the George Floyd situation.
Who doesn't know about that?
Right. So, and one of the gentlemen said, it's like that in life, everyday life, like we can't breathe. Like constantly in America, we feel like the systematic racism that the whites have their knee in our throat or in our back. Right. And we're always constantly trying to get up but just be looked at as equals. And so in America now, we talk so much about equality and trying to buy back the block is a term where we try to buy development and real estate and build legacy for our children and grandchildren. But just like I'm sure like in Jamaica, you know, we've seen what happened to our parents and our grandparents and our great grandparents, and the stories continue to go down, and the stories do not seem to get any better, right? Like we are constantly fighting just to find our worth, right? And the way I look at it, the way we discussed it, Henneka, is we got to create our own field, our own game, our own playing field, if for lack of a better term, where we don't look for their acceptance, right? And say, am I enough for you? We have to look internally at ourselves and say, yes, we are enough, right? And we can buy from each other and sell products to each other and understand that by doing that, we are creating value within our own communities.
You touch a great point. And even as you were talking, before you even got to that point, it's something that just flashed in my thoughts that we as black people seem to want to be accepted by the majority, right? But at the same time, amongst our own communities, we are not doing the things or being the people that would be supportive of each other, would be embracing each other, because in the same way we want another group to welcome us and to even give us that validation, we ourselves are becoming hindrance to the process by not being our brother's keeper, by not being supportive, by being, you know, what we call in Jamaica having that crab in a barrel mentality. So when we see a black person rising, well, not even black, when we see a person from our community rising, then instead of showing support, we do what is necessary to bring them down as opposed to pull them up.
Right. And this is I believe it starts from the media, right? From when we're children, right? That mentality of, seeing somebody in our own pigment, right? Another black human being doing well, no matter where they're from, what nationality, and uplifting that one and saying, great job. That crab in the barrel mentality is what they put in our heads since we were little children, right? Like, think about it. Let's talk about it in the food industry. If you go to a Jamaican restaurant or a soul food restaurant and you have a bad meal, right? We go back and tell our friends and our neighbors and our family members, don't ever go to this Jamaican restaurant, don't ever go to this soul food restaurant. The food was horrible. So what you're really doing is kicking dirt on your fellow brother or sister. Whereas if you go to an Italian restaurant or a pizza shop and they may do the same exact thing, we don't ever go back. We go back 9 times, 10 times, 11 times and still give them our dollar. But yet to our own brother and sister, we're like, we're never going back there again. What? Why is that? Right. Or if you get a bad haircut or you get, you know, somebody does your hair and it transcends across all professions and business. Right. We have to be more forgiving and understand that many times in our own community, we don't come from a third generation business owner or a fourth generation business. We are in America. There's a lot of first generation construction companies, a lot of first generation hairstylists and restaurant owners. So we got to be patient with them as they are building their craft, right? And not be so quick to kick them in their back, right? And understand that they need time to develop just the same way that the people who we want praise and honor from, they had 400 years head start, right? And you know, we have to understand the game that is being played upon us and stop looking for acceptance from those that never wanted us to be there anyway, right?
Right. So you mentioned that scenario, you know, you have a bad meal, you go to a black restaurant, you have a bad meal, you tell your friends and everybody not to go back there. And what came to mind when you said that was the philosophy of divide and conquer. So let's go back to several hundred years, right? From slavery. Let's call a spade a spade. And in that time, the white man pretty much divided the black people, the African villages, and divide so that they can conquer. What role do you think that has played in our society today, what we're experiencing, you know, the negative effects of that?
Yeah, so everything, the divide and conquer is one of the greatest ways for us to turn on each other, right? And they set that up in neighborhoods, right? Redlining, as we know about what redlining has done here in America. And for your guests, what redlining is basically the banks wouldn't give certain loans to those that were looking for to buy a house, right? So if you're going to look for to buy a mortgage or need a mortgage to buy a home, in certain communities, they would make sure that blacks were unable to own homes, but they put us all in certain areas of the city. So what that did was it was easier for policing for them to come into our community and beat up on, you know, our black men, our black women, and to treat our black children in a way that was not favorable, right? And then to also bring the value of those homes down, right? Because now those homes bring no taxes back. And so now everybody's trying to get out of what they will call the ghetto and move to the suburbs. But that's, to your question, that's part of the divide and conquer, right? They push drugs into those communities. There's high unemployment in those communities. The schools in those communities don't have the best teachers, the best instructors. So what you have is a whole generation after generation of people who cannot get out of those particular areas of the city. And then that's what that divide and conquer has done. It has beat us up every single day. And then when we try to get out, you're looked upon as unfavorable, even in your own community, for trying to get out of that current situation and better yourself or your family.
Mm-hmm. So then what is your responsibility, Eli, your personal responsibility, along with your colleagues, to shift that mindset and to do what you can to cause some form of change? What role do you see yourself playing?
Yeah, so great question. So Hanika, what I try to do and get it from my parents is I'm always trying to give back to the community, whether it's through my foundations, whether it's through, I'm also doing something called the Dream Summit, where I'm bringing in top business professionals from all over the country once a year to have a 2-day summit where they talk about how to create wealth and value within the black community. I also, when I'm hiring, I make sure that 80% of my staff is people that look like us, right? It's from the black and brown community. And one of the things that I'm most proud of is we have received multiple awards. One of the awards we received last year was called the Harriet Tubman Award because of our diversity and inclusion. What some people outside of the company call my companies the United Nations, because I have people who work for me from all over the country, from China, from India, from Africa, from even from Jamaica, from Afghanistan. So we are, you know, my companies is a melting pot that truly represent what the world looks like. In addition to that, we make sure that we even for a person, say, in their early 20s or late teens, committed a crime which now has become illegal. Like, so let's call it what it is. Let's say somebody sold weed and they got a 5-year charge, right? And they were locked up in there from 20 to 25. And now they're out, but because they had a felony, they're having trouble finding a job. We have hired those individuals within the company and for construction. And many of those individuals have been with the company and have moved up through the ranks and now are in senior management. So that is my job. That is my duty, is to always realize that people deserve sometimes a second chance, a third chance, a fourth chance, right? And we always try to give back to the community by doing that and by being an example.
I like that a lot, Eli. And I like the whole idea of the United Nations. You know, I know I would thrive in a situation like that. Now, you mentioned that you're, you know, part of your role, you're teaching on how to create wealth. And no doubt, owning businesses is one way that we can do that. Now, your parents, they've been business owners for several decades. When you were growing up, did you know from very early on that you wanted to follow in their footsteps? And first of all, what businesses were they involved with? And did you know from very early that you wanted to pursue business as well?
Yeah, I always knew that I wanted more, right? My parents started their company when I was 13 years old. And it was their first business was a carpet clean. From there, it evolved into a mechanical contractor. And that's what it is today. But early on, I remember, you know, at the age of 17, my dad bringing me with him in different boardrooms. And I learned the value of how you negotiate a contract by watching my father. Now, my father, Haneke, only had a ninth grade education. He dropped out of high school in ninth grade. But he was also a Black Panther in his early years in life. So he taught me to realize that everything that they tell us, make sure you do your research before you go and accept it. So I remember going, true story, I remember going into boardrooms with him. And this one particular board meeting that we went to, this general contractor said to him, Jim, his name was Jim, here, we're going to give you a contract for $40,000 for you to go and do this work. And my dad slid the contract back across the table to the gentleman. And he says, no, I don't want this contract. And the guy was like, why? Like, that I'm surprised. And he was like, why don't you want it? And he was like, because I didn't do the takeoff. I didn't do this. I didn't estimate this. This is what you're telling me the job is at, valued at $40,000. And so that, from that point forward, it helped me to realize, never take and trust what somebody else is telling you without first understanding what that project is and understanding what the value of that job is. So
that's what powerful.
So what happens in our community a lot is, we give, you might be like, yeah, you could do this, and you give somebody a contract for $10,000 or $5,000 or $100,000. But if you don't do your own takeoff or understand your overhead and profit and where you need to be as a business, how do you really know what the value is, right? So, like I said, he had a ninth grade education, but I still going in boardrooms to understand when I'm sitting in there, the art of negotiation, right? And I learned that from my father and how to deal. And that's just one story I could tell you of many that he taught me.
And so, what from that is knowing your worth, or know that you got to find out what you're worth and so on, and know that and stick to that, and you communicate that to others. In the midst of the noise, and I mean the racial noise right now, how do you as a business owner, Eli, stand up for what you're worth, knowing your worth? What is that process like for you when you know that you're part of a minority group and, yeah, with lots of prejudices and all of that baggages that come with the color of your skin?
Right. So, I think I was talking about this yesterday on another podcast I was on, and I said there's a good movie that just came out, and it's so deep, called Judas and the Messiah, right? And many times we look inside of our own community for praise or for honor, and a lot of times, like you spoke about earlier in our conversation, that there are that crab in a barrel mentality where even with our community, there are ones that would try to keep us down. So I know here in the States, a lot of people look for politicians, right, or the political arena for them to be uplifted or for them to get to the next level. There is no policy, and I'll say this, there is no policy, Haneke, that is going to tell me to love my fellow man or to help my fellow man or sister on how to, you know, move forward. So I always say to people, don't put so much faith in government, in a government that has tried to keep us down, right? Understand, if you have a good heart and you know, build relationships and partnerships with people that want to see you succeed. And that doesn't mean that only people that want to see you succeed is only Black people, right? So those partnerships and relationships can come from people that don't even look like you. So don't be so thin focused, as I would call it, where you're not looking at the entire ocean of what might be out there. You got to know when to throw back a fish that may not be the right fish to eat, and when you have fish that found the right person, so to speak, that can help you further your cause. So I hope that answers your question. I know that was a little bit long-winded, but I don't look to politicians basically to help me or to move forward my agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you actually did. Earlier you mentioned, you referenced George Floyd and that very now powerful statement, which is a metaphor for the experiences of Black in America, "I can't breathe." As a business owner, Eli, I'd like you to share with us an instance perhaps where you feel like, and perhaps not even a business owner, as a person, you feel like you've gone through a situation as a result of being Black that you couldn't breathe, that you've just had enough. When was that time? What was it like?
I'll give you one of the most more recent ones. This is probably about 3-4 years ago. And what happened was, this goes back to that Judas and the Messiah moment, right? There was a Black banker that is looked upon in the community as doing so much for the community, right? And so we went to this particular bank and company did and asked him for a line of credit. And because the companies were scaling at a rapid rate at that time. So I reached out to him and said to the gentleman, I said, listen, we want to come in and talk to you and talk to you about increasing our line of credit because we have a bunch of jobs going on the East Coast and we need, you know, more capital to get these jobs going in the right direction and keep them going and for all the reasons, right? So this goes back to why sometimes you can't look at our own people to help you. So we gave him the financials. He asked us for the financials. My accountant team provided him with everything that he needed. After 2 weeks, we still hadn't heard from him. I reached out to the gentleman. I was like, listen, we sent this to you and we still haven't heard anything. He was very dismissive. He said, okay, I'll get back with you I'll get back with you in a couple of days. At that time, I shifted my focus and went back to the accountant firm that we work with. I said, listen, who else can you take our financials to? Because these jobs are starting and I need to go get this money for this line of credit to keep things moving in the right direction. So we pitched it with two other banks, two white gentlemen at the banks that were VPs. Within 24 hours, we got back two different offers, you know, for a substantial amount of money, more than what originally I had asked for that Black gentleman at his bank for, right? So we signed the paperwork within 24 hours with one of the banks. A week later, I called that particular banker back, the Black gentleman. I said, oh, did you ever make a decision on that? And he says to me, Eli, yeah, I can't do anything on this. It's just a bad time. I can't do anything. Some dismissive answer. I said, it's okay. It's all right. And he's like, oh, really? I said, yeah, it's all right. I already got it taken care of. I went to this bank here, XYZ, you know, I'm not going to say the name. And they actually gave me this amount. And then it was silence on the phone, right? He got very quiet and he was like, okay. And I wanted to let him know that even though he dismissed me, that in spite of that, you know, my companies are still going to rise up, right? And I think that, you know, I share that story to say that sometimes we put so much focus at looking at people within our community to help us. And sometimes we have to go outside our community, unfortunately, right? Because either A, they don't want to help us, or B, they don't know how to help us.
And I have to ask this question because what role do you think that race actually played there? Because this is somebody from your community.
I think that race played a big role, right? Because I think that it goes back to when we were as children, right? And watching the media, watching TV. Maybe this particular gentleman had been burned before with other black businesses, and maybe that's why he didn't want to lend and looked at all of us as one, put us all in one category. And that's really sad, because he's a black gentleman himself, right? So he judged us harsher. You know, that goes back to that whole restaurant thing that me and you discussed earlier in the conversation, right? We're so quick to close the book on different restaurant owners, so to speak, you know, and we judge them to a higher level of criticism, right? And we're more critical of them. And I think that he fell into that same category, right? Oh, he looked at it and said, oh, here's another black business. He said he's doing that, you know, and I had all my I's dotted and my T's crossed. I had everything put together in a nice package for him to say yes. But he still, instead of saying no, he just chose not even to answer any level, right? Which, you know, which speaks to who he is. He's still a banker today. He has a reputation in the community for not helping any other black businesses or brown businesses. So it's unfortunate, because he's really is looked at, you know, as a Judas at this point in time, as, you know, somebody who we can't trust.
Well, you know, we're way past our time, but there is, I need to share an experience that I think ties back to what you were talking about. And perhaps it goes at beyond, you know, it's skin deep in the sense that it's self-hate. And here why I said this, and in 2015, I'll never forget, up to that point, I traveled a lot, and I don't think I've ever experienced racism and racism from my own people, in that I went to Antigua, which is in the Caribbean, right? Predominantly black people. I was in Antigua with a group of other Caribbean nationals at a hotel. I don't remember the name of the hotel, and I perhaps won't even call it. But just to say that the group of Caribbean people were sitting at the table and having a great time, we experienced such negative attitude and reaction from the waitresses that were there, the persons who were serving us, waiting on our table and everything. Whereas the white guests, to put it, you know, very clear, they got, you know, the niceties and stuff. And I thought to myself, you know, this is a matter of self-hate. It burns you to see, first of all, you're perhaps thinking, how do you get to be here when I'm actually, and have to have me serve you as a black person? You know, that is like beyond them. It's that kind of a thinking. And I couldn't fathom it, except to say that I think it has to do with some self-hate and the fact that I shouldn't be serving you because you are black, you're not white. And it all has to do with the conditioning of our minds, you know, that white is superior. And we could have a whole different discussion on that. And so that's what it is. That's what it boils down to, I think.
Yes, 100%. Yep. And it's sad. It's self-hate. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. Call it what, like, we have to call, as you said, a spade a spade. Some people just hate the skin that they're, and don't even know it.
Yeah, yeah. And me being there remind you that, yeah, I'm black, you know? Like, we have a lot of unconditioning to do, reconditioning, or whatever condition we want to call it. We have a lot of work to do, but I don't believe all is lost, Eli. And so while our time has come to an end, I'm just going to ask you to give your final thoughts, you know, in about 30 seconds while we wrap. And you also at the end of that share, how might my community get in touch with you for further conversation?
So thank you, Hanika, for letting me be there. Be a part of your show. One day soon, hopefully I'll be able to visit Jamaica as soon as COVID calms down and we're able to travel again. My final thought on this is please, all of us, let's live every day to help each other, right? To uplift each other, and to especially take time to care for our youth, right? And instill wisdom in our youth, because they truly are our next generation, and we need to push forward our agenda of black liberation and pride, and not just talk about it, but be about it. So no matter what, you know, please make sure that you reach out to your nieces, to your nephews, to your kid, children's friends, and have those heartfelt conversations on your experiences, so we can continue to push forward our agenda to, as a people, grow. And if you want to reach out to me, please reach out to me. I'm on LinkedIn. My LinkedIn account name is Eli Smith, spelled ELISMITHCEO. Please reach out to me. Also, take a minute also to look at the summit if you're able to visit this year. We're going to have key guests such as Michael Eric Dyson and Dorsey Levens, who was a Super Bowl champion from the Green Bay Packers, who's going to be there. We're going to have senior executives from McDonald's and from Bank of America. The website for the Dream Summit is www.mydreamsummit.com. And the date of the summit is going to be August 14th and 15th in Syracuse, New York. So please take a look at it and look forward to seeing everyone soon.
Wow, such a great time I had talking with you, Eli. And I know that my community is inspired. I've been inspired not to continue to do more, but to be more, to be better. So thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, my peak performer, for tuning into this episode with Eli Smith. Were you inspired? Have you been thinking about how you can be better? Well, yeah, do better, be better, because you are enough. I want you to know that you are enough. I look forward to connecting with you next week. In the meantime, please reach out to me if you want me to produce your podcast, if you just don't have the time, if you're an organization listening in and you think, you know, maybe we should start a podcast, reach out to me. If you are an individual and you want to have coaching or you want to be part of my mastermind or to get my books or my online courses, please visit hennikowatkisportra.com and send me a WhatsApp message from my homepage. If this message has inspired you, if this episode has inspired you today, please leave a rate and review in Apple Podcasts, or if you're visiting from the show notes on hennikowatkisportra.com, then certainly leave a comment. I'd love to hear from you. This week's point of hope. From one man, he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth, and he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. Acts 17, verse 26. What good?
We needed to raise capital, but our experience with local financial institutions was that they were cautious and slow to act, and interest rates were far too high. We had real concerns about financing our business through outside equity investors and the possibility of interference. Could we get a fair valuation for our business? We had our own ideas about the business and its value. Should I go the traditional route of bank financing, or should I try the Jamaica Stock Exchange? So we made a call and experienced transformation of our business through conversations. I'm John Mahfood, CEO of Jamaican Teas, and we're listed on the Jamaica Stock Exchange.
Give us a call today at 876-967-3271 to begin your transformation through conversation. We want to see your company listed on the Jamaica Stock Exchange.